This is Rafflebix After Hours.
Oh hi, a possible mispronunciation of one of those Strymon power supplies or pedals or something. Oh hey, it's episode 108 of Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you for tuning in. My name's Ben, and Peter's here too, and we're going to talk stuff at your ear holes. Yes, Pete, what have you been up to this week? How have you been? Far away.
What have I been up to this week? Well, mainly I have been getting equipment ready for sale.
Ah, is the Great Purge approaching?
Yes, it is.
Ah, okay. Tell us. The only thing I know of is that old Roland MC thingy.
Yeah, that's the MC909. That is now complete with the little keycap that I had to import from Sintar in the US of A.
US of A.
And many other devices as well that I've elected to dispose of.
Is there anything I'll be unhappy about?
I don't suspect there is.
No shock sales.
There is the Peak.
Yep.
That's going to go.
That's been on the to-do list for years.
Yes.
Literally.
The Tip Top Audio Circadian Rhythms is going to go.
Yep.
The U-Grids, which I got for the Black System, but is now redundant.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to go. And possibly the, and I can never remember the number, the sequencer, which was the forerunner or the inspiration for the...
Oh, yeah. The Metropolis. So
yes,
like,
yes.
Did you build it?
Yes, I did.
Ah, how many times did you use it?
I tested it.
Ah.
And that was it.
Oh, no.
Well, it was displaced pretty quickly once I got the ground control on board. So there isn't any real requirement. I'll save it back. I'll hold it back until everything else has been sold.
Gotcha.
So those are the items initially it's going, and quite a few pieces of camera equipment and other bits and pieces that are just
You'd be welcome
redundant.
To put a post on the ModCaf chat. I'm sure you might have some interest there.
Yes. My standard way of disposing of equipment is eBay for me personally. I haven't ever used Reverb.
Yeah, Reverb's, I like Reverb. Works well.
And I would imagine there's mostly some advantages to other methods of reselling your equipment. But because I've used eBay for the, well, I want to say 20 years, but most probably is almost 20 years.
I want to know now.
eBay's older than that, but I'm sure it's just started about 2002. 2003.
26 years.
Yeah, things have...
It's older than I am. It's 1995.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was very primitive back then.
Mm.
Anyways, so I've been going through the process of photographing all the items.
Yes.
And I do...
You have high standards for your photos.
I do go overboard with those sometimes. It's most probably not even required. I think most people just snap them with their smartphone or something like that. But I like to get all the the bokeh, all the depth of field, everything, and really try and sell the product.
I imagine it can help quite a lot.
I think it most probably does. I mean, if people are looking at your listing, they're most probably subconsciously feeling that you've made more effort.
Yeah, and might make them feel you're a bit more of a professional in what you do generally, and you treat your gear better, I hope.
Yeah, I hope it engenders that confidence in the product with the customer. How do you normally resell your equipment? What's your preferred channel?
When it's modular, and I have sold and bought a lot of modular, actually, it was almost entirely Facebook groups, which I know, if you haven't done this for modular stuff, it sounds super dodgy, and it may become dodgy, but at the time, the size of the modular community on those groups that, you know, was committed to buying and selling and just enjoying modular, very rarely heard of anybody pulling a fast one or just being generally slimy on the internet. So yeah, it was totally fine. And you just put up a post, all your pictures, price list, people message you, give you the address, PayPal, friends and family, so you don't have to pay the servicey fee things, so no buyer protection. So there's a lot of trust in that community, and I don't think I'd do it that way now. I think I'd go Reverb for everything.
How does Reverb work? I've never used it.
Very similar stuff. You'd be familiar with it if you listed something. There's an option to bump listings, which is kind of handy, so they'll appear at the top of searches and stuff for a percentage of your earnings, really, beyond what Reverb normally takes, which isn't too much. It's got a lot of features for categorizing via brand and condition and serial numbers and that kind of thing. But yeah, It's great. You can easily put in all of your shipping rates for various locations. It's set up well for actual businesses to run and with stock level type stuff as well, I think, if you want it. It's been great. I've enjoyed it.
I have noticed that quite a few retailers do seem to utilize
definitely the
Reaver.
Smaller ones, yeah.
And I would imagine you've got a very much a captive audience in some respects because it's very focused on musical equipment, whereas
definitely.
Obviously eBay is just about everything.
Everything. Yeah.
What about buyer protection, seller protection, that type of thing?
It's PayPal, so you've got the usual stuff.
So all the protection is through the payment system?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing inherent in Reaver? They don't take any responsibility at all?
I don't know about that kind of stuff. I haven't looked into it too much because I just trusted in PayPal to be fine.
And what about the Reaver fees? Are they reasonable?
I don't know them off the top of my head, but I was never upset by what actually turned up in my PayPal.
Okay, I see. So the PayPal transaction is processed through Reverb, and through the processing procedure, they deduct their fees at that point.
I believe so.
Because eBay, I don't know if it's for me, because my eBay account's a business account, and eBay have changed the way they use it. So they take the fees from the customer. I'm not sure quite how they get hold of the fees, because I still think a lot of customers are using PayPal, but then they pay it directly into your bank account, not into your PayPal account.
Yeah. And in fact, I've now Googled it. They've changed since the last time I sold something on Reverb. They've gone the same way as eBay. They don't support PayPal for sellers. So everything I said no longer matters or counts.
Okay. So I wonder if that is something to do with a change of law.
Potentially.
In Europe, unless this is a global
this
change.
Appears to be global on the Reverb side, at least.
Okay. Well, I mean, I've only done one sale with this new procedure, and it was fine, other than you don't get any funds until you can prove that the item that you are selling has been collected by or you have delivered it to the customer.
What can you use for that, other than, because I'd always hang on to, I'd always send stuff tracked, so I had the tracking number, and all I could really do is input that. Is there anything
exactly.
else you can
do? Yeah, exactly. So when I did it recently, well, I say recently, last year, I inputted the tracking number for the shipment, and eBay seemed to track it.
Oh, so it can also look at those notifications of when it's
there. I suppose
that
they can just use that tracking number and track it through their system.
Yeah.
So as soon as the tracking system showed that the item had been delivered, the eBay system then forwarded the funds to me.
Gotcha.
But I'm not sure how they're charging. I haven't really thought about that or looked, because invariably eBay would charge you their fees later on, and they would invoice you on a monthly basis.
Most likely.
Mm.
Food for thought. Got to have a look at the numbers.
Anyway, so I'm expecting to put quite a few items eventually up. So that's my mission at the moment. So lots of photography, lots of photographing. Yeah. And the bit I hate most is the writing the descriptions.
Oh, yeah.
I really want to be ultra accurate. You know, so there's no issues. You know, send an item to someone and there's a slight nick on the faceplate or something like that, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
I want the customer to fully understand what they've purchased.
Yeah.
And what they expect to receive. So setting the correct level of expectations on their behalf.
Makes sense. Very honest.
It just saves a lot of grief later on.
Definitely.
Plus the fact I've got 100% rating, which again I've had for
can't sacrifice it.
Nearly 20 years, so I don't want to destroy that in any shape or form.
Gotcha.
Anyway, how's your week been?
Not too bad. Lots of stress with moving stuff, but I'm surviving. I have shown you an item. You've taken it for a test drive. Listeners, if you didn't catch this on a previous episode, I ordered a fiddle bow bread knife, which you described as basically a junior hacksaw of the bread knife world, which is exactly what it is, but it's been great. We've tried it a couple of times, couple of different sourdoughs, and it is a hot knife through butter. Very pleased. So would recommend. They're not expensive.
The one thing I was going to ask in reference to that is, are the blades replaceable? I.e., do they sell replacement blades for it?
I don't know. What they did include in the packaging is a note to say, do not unscrew the blade because this is held in tension.
Yeah, you don't want it to... Yeah, that could be a problem.
It could ping off and slice into you. I assume that's what they're trying to prevent.
Or you can't get it back on.
Yeah, potentially. Because on most hacksaws, on one end you'll have kind of a screw thread that will kind of pull it tight, wouldn't it? And there's no such mechanism here.
Yes, or sometimes there's a sort of mechanism that tensions it, that sort of clamps down and sort of creates tension along the blade.
Yeah, perhaps the maker has a small jig that can bend the wood just a tad while they install the blade or something.
I'd imagine it's something in that vein.
Yes, but I'm very pleased with that one. I've also been thinking and mulling over and other words for thinking that I can't think of right now about modular and cases. Did I mention last time about hairpin legs and such?
Yes.
Yes. So that is formulating somewhat in my brain, and sketches have gone a bit further and discussions have been had with members of the Modular Cafe and friends. So there is a friend of one of the mod caffers who is a very handy craftsman woodworker who's made guitars and other such things, and he's making a modular case, and he kind of wants to set it up as a little bit of an ad hoc business type thing just because he enjoys that kind of stuff, and he's offered to build me a case at cost. And I've been thinking it's a very tempting offer. So the thoughts are, at the moment, I think 126 HP potentially is the width that would work, where I can still get my legs underneath it so I can sit at it kind of as a bar stool, sit at the modular, if you see what I mean, and probably 4 rows of, so it's a big boy.
Yes.
Not quite a huge moth, but
still
pretty big,
reasonably sizable, having 4 rows and being that wide.
Definitely, that's kind of it. I'm just thinking, in terms of the style, I love the kind of curved, obviously it's not curved because they're straight sections, but you know, where it kind of comes back over you a little bit, so you can get kitchen countertop height hairpin legs. So the plan would be to get that kind of thing. The modules would start at a relatively steep angle. I did sort of sketch this out in Blender a little bit, potentially between 60 to 70 degrees on the first one, and then the third row would be vertical, and then the last one just a little bit tipping over, if you see what I mean.
So it's standing upright, and it's like a sort of shallow C shape.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way of putting it. So it'd be the kind of command console of a spaceship kind of feel. And then I've also had to think of the main problem of cats being near it, because cables, ooh, things to chew. So I've thought, oh yeah, so a suitcase would have a lid. You can't really make a lid for that, especially easily. So, you know, the kind of, I don't really know what they're called, snap fasteners, little pop button things that you get on kind of coats, or occasionally on the sort of the top of a pair of jeans or something.
Or on some convertible cars.
Yeah, those things. I've no idea what they're called. But I was thinking sort of a row of those on the top and the bottom at the front, and a couple on the sides, and I could easily sew together a some kind of nylon cover that would remain kind of taut to just hide the cables so the cats don't get in there and start messing with it. Ideas. Anyway.
We haven't had cats for a number of years, but my recollection was they weren't so much chewy, they were more clawy.
Yeah, ours eat things.
Okay. Ours, they do like a chew, but they certainly like to claw at stuff.
They'll definitely claw at things like silicon sealant on sort of the bottom of the skirting board. That's annoying.
Yeah, you've got indoor cats, haven't you?
We do, so they need more entertaining,
yeah,
basically,
because they're not prowling abroad, so
hunting
to speak.
Mice.
Yeah,
yeah.
Bringing the delightful corpses back in.
Yep. The worst part of it is normally all you get is the stomach and nothing else. That's all they bring back for you, or they give you half of it. Anyway, gruesome. But yeah, modular thoughts are on the brain, and of course I've had to be sitting on modular grid to think, what direction am I going to take such things in? Let me bring up my notes here. Command center, let me check. I can't remember what width I did this one at. Did I do it at 200 and something? No, this is 126. Lovely. So, I had to think back through my history of using many a module, and I wanted to just go for things that were just great fun to use. And then I also had to think of a sensible order to buy things in so that it would have actual utility quite early on. My top list are... Top list are? No. Things that are high on the list, put it that way, high on the list would be the radio music, of course.
We've got to have one of those.
Got to have a radio music. A staple. This synth part is really boring. Add reverb, add rain samples. That makes me feel really nice. I'll do that. I also really enjoyed the Varigate 4 Plus from Maleco Heavy Industry. Not a groundbreaking sequencer by any means, but it worked, and it was just fun, immediate, easy, compact, all of the good things. The Turing machine from Music Thing, again, is a must, but it must also be accompanied by a quantizer. I didn't have much use of it when it was unquantized. So at the moment, I'm thinking about quad quantizers. There are options. Could look at the Instro Harmonaig. There's Shackmat Bard's Quartet, which is now available. There would be the ADAC one, there are options there. The other things, one that's just utility, but it's great, Chaos Devices Batumi, you can't go wrong.
No,
it works great.
I would agree with that.
And Euclidean Circles V2, though I would have to have something vaguely rhythmical to be able to use it with, otherwise it's just very pretty lights.
I would imagine you would buy a pre-built one of those.
Yes, I don't quite have the ability for some of the scale of the surface mount components at the current time.
There's no kit versions available anyway. I was actually looking today.
Mm. Oh, today, so, you were?
Yeah, I was actually thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind getting one of those as a kit.
Not even PCBs or anything?
There is nothing.
Nothing
and
at all.
I went to the website for the manufacturer.
vpme.de, if you want to have a look.
That directed me to a link that took me to Mod Wiggler.
Yes.
And one of the first lines in the listing, which has all details for the fully assembled units and the kits, was, I don't have the parts, I can't get the parts.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing, but basically the semiconductor shortages hit home in that department. So
I'll have to said if keep I can, my eye peeled at some point.
Said if I can get any of the parts, they'll be dedicated to the pre-built stuff. So I'm not sure if anyone actually has any stock of it.
Yeah, I think I bought it direct when I got mine. I don't think it was even in retailers at the time.
I know that Schneider's do it.
Yeah.
If they've got stock, which I haven't checked, and a few other places.
It's not an immediate concern, but I'll keep my eyes peeled.
But I would imagine this problem is going to be hitting a lot of other manufacturers.
Oh, yep, definitely. It's not going anywhere fast.
So the issue, apart from you've got quite a lot of modules to fill because it's a relatively big case, is that you're possibly going to struggle getting some of the modules.
Quite possibly, although that might just make it grow slower, which is a good thing in the modular world.
Keep a lid on the whole process.
Definitely.
And also feed more anticipation into it because it's not just a case of getting the funds, it's finding the product.
Definitely. Of course, lots of kits, because I do enjoy kits and the money saving there. Other things, boring things, the Bofaco output module worked amazingly for me, so I'd go that way. And I would probably want to go for some kind of voice early on, like the Dopefer mini synth voice or something equivalent.
What are you thinking in the respect of mixers?
Mixers, I don't know, because the one you've got is quite tidy.
Yeah.
I quite like that.
Reasonably inexpensive as well.
Yeah, so that was on the list. I did also look at, they do the modular one where you can buy a sort of a channel at a time, but it'd work out really expensive. The other option, or is a different route to take really, would be following what Anthony from the ModCaf is doing, which he's got the Expert Sleepers ES9, which is the USB-C audio interface, which has a mixer built into it. You'd have to address it via MIDI, or I think there's kind of a web application for it, but that would be very convenient for recording and having quite a capable mixer and headphone amplifier and output all in one. He uses I think it might be Akai. Either way, one of those sort of USB MIDI control surfaces to control it and do all the MIDI mapping that way. It's quite cool.
I still haven't sorted out that hex mix. I've still got a...
Oh, yeah, that one.
Looks like, does Dopefer do a mixer? Looks like they might do as well.
I don't really know. The kind of stuff that I would want, which has, you know, sends, pan, mute, all that kind of stuff, as well as a headphone output in it, I don't think I've seen one from them.
And the one that I... sort of handcraft, I don't know why. It's really expensive and I can't find it.
Is it the WMD Performance Mixer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the flagship of the mixer world.
So have
pretty cool.
You seen that particular mixer in action anywhere?
I've not got up close and personal with it, but I saw a lot of them at Brighton Modular Sessions. I mean, I say a lot of them, maybe three, but it's very expensive.
Yeah, it's very
big.
Very expensive.
Yeah, even in portable cases, people had that whole mixer. So they used a lot of their HP available for big old mixer.
It's a big old mixer as well. I thought they had a slightly smaller version of it.
There's the sort of the original one, which is a size, and then there's an expander that has mutes, there's an expander that has two more channels, I think, and then there's also the big one, which is kind of all of it under one panel. So there's kind of options. It's a bit flexible. So yeah, there's food for thought on the direction that I may or may not take. But I would need your advice on power, most definitely.
When are you expecting to embark on this? Or is it
once the move is done, basically, and we've bought a sofa after that.
What's the timescale on that?
I think we should be in April sometime.
I don't think our listeners actually know that you're moving.
No, they don't. I'm moving. You're not going to know where or when, but I just told you when. You won't know where. That's the stress. Emails. Conveyances. Solicitors. Mortgages.
So what time in April did you say?
I think it could be early April.
That's not too bad. So sort of end of March, beginning of April could be done and dusted, and your mind will possibly, apart from sofas, swing over to modular sim.
Exactly. Yeah, and power. So it'll be mains powered, as you would expect.
Yeah.
What I would like to do is, having no appreciable understanding of how these things work, let's say there's, because you've got one power entry in your Moth, don't you? Or do you have multiple?
No, one power entry.
Big old IEC in there.
Going to four power supplies.
Gotcha. So let's say, because there'd be no point in me buying four power supplies when I have three modules in it. So I was thinking one power entry, one power supply. Would it then be a relatively simple matter to get another one and do the wiring?
Yes, because if you've got it all set up with spade connectors, it's just a case of disconnecting things and reconnecting. What I've suggested is that you design all the mountings in the case for all the power supplies you intend to put in it, and all the power distribution strips as well.
Right, gotcha.
Even if you haven't installed them yet, at least do it prior to anything else.
Yeah, so get the first unit, whatever that might be, one power supply, one bus board, and use those as templates to mark out where everything else might go or something like that.
And what I did with mine, because it is a large case, on the back, because the sides, front and top, that's the right way to describe it, are 18 mil oak, but the bottom and the back are actually only 6 mil ply.
Gotcha, that was suggested by the woodworking chap.
Well, it saves on weight, it saves on cost, and it's a lot more flexible.
Yeah.
And the bottom and the back are where you attach all your power supplies and power distribution strips.
Gotcha. Mine being supported by four legs, I'll have to consult him on load-bearingness for the bottom, but the back will definitely be thinner
material. It should be okay if you saw the legs go into the corners.
Yeah.
But I also drilled at regular spots. I want to say it's a 40 millimeter hole, and lots of them for cooling. So the
good idea.
So the whole back has got something in the region of, I don't know, maybe up to 20 holes of that size. It's in between all the power distribution strips, there's holes at regular intervals.
Good
all
idea.
The way across. Only because when I had the original Moth, which was slightly smaller, I did note how warm it got on extended use, and there's no real way of venting it out. It's fine when you haven't fully populated it with modules, because there's plenty of ways that the heat can exhaust out the front.
Yeah.
But once you've actually fully populated the whole thing, you do need some way, and obviously you could install some sort of fan extractor thing, but that's just going to add noise.
Yeah, which could get some of the really nice low noise computer fans like Noctua make. That might be okay,
as long as they don't start inducing noise into the actual circuitry.
Good point.
I'm not just talking about the physical noise of the fans rotating, I'm talking about their electrical noise and how they may feed into the whole thing. So with where it comes to modular, I prefer passive cooling. Exactly.
Gotcha. Well, I shall be updating if and when things happen. And of course, I could, if I was going synth voice at the start, I can always do that before there's a case.
Yeah.
Should the need want.
Is the gentleman in question that's going to be constructing this for you, is he providing all the rails and everything else, or is that for you to...
Anthony has sourced those. For his own case, he's getting a suitcase made, 126 HP suitcase.
Okay.
So quite a long one. That's two rows and a 1U on the top, so that's going to be quite cool. I think these will be coming from Synthrax, if I use the same distributor, but happy for other options.
Well, as I say, the other one obviously is Clicks and Clocks in Berlin.
Yeah, gotcha.
I mean, it's all down to cost, really.
Of course. I think the ones that Anthony found, he's going sliding nuts, and these ones have special slots in them so you can add more halfway along, so you don't have to dismantle the case to add them in.
You can drop them in mid-rail.
Yeah.
I do detest sliding nuts though. I know it's cheaper.
I told Anthony, I'm very sorry, but I did make my peace with sliding nuts through using the big Behringer case. If you have a magnetic screwdriver and they are made of a ferrous metal, it's quite easy because you can just slide them around with your screwdriver. Work nicely.
Yeah, it's just the sort of... depends how many sliding nuts you can put in, but if you've got residual spares, then they're just going to slide around and make annoying kind of...
they're awful in
noises.
Portable cases, most definitely, because exactly, they just slosh around in a very annoying way.
But if you've got exactly the right amount of nuts for the amount of modules you have, then it's not a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's a way of saving cost.
Yes, indeed. And if you're prepared to deal with it, wait. If you've got a portable case. Not a huge amount. Anyway, last thing from this week, even though it might have been last week, I can't remember, the ModCaf has moved partially in its internet presence. We're on Discord now.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. Are you a Discord man or a Slack person at all?
I know of them, but I have not really utilized them myself personally.
I'm getting used to it. But it's quite cool, like having a bit of a private forum type situation.
So this is a Discord server that's been specifically started for... Mm-hmm. It's for the exclusive use of Modular CAF patrons.
Kind of. We sort of piggybacked on one that Anthony already had set up and he was happy to convert to the ModCaf world. But it's great. We've got all our little categories of discussion, self-promotion, off-topic, introduce yourself, ModCaf chat, ModCaf events, and then a whole music listening, videos, tutorials, music, gas, deals section, which I avoid.
So does that mean that Facebook has been completely abandoned or just not utilized as much?
There's a lot of members who either don't have or are trying to escape social media, so it helps a lot of us in that sense. Mm-hmm. But it's already felt a little bit more alive, a lot more active, which is nice. And a lot of our members live stream, and there's good ways you can integrate who's live streaming and when, scheduling things like that. And there's a feed that Anthony set up where any of our members can have their YouTube channels plugged in, so when somebody uploads a video, it pops in there. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it sounds great.
It's going well. So, weeks updated, activities logged, I suppose. There is one very small piece of news that we must talk about. Moog are discontinuing the Dark series of The Matriarch and The Grandmother, which is sad, because at one point you kind of wanted one, because they do look swish.
I still wouldn't mind getting one, but I'm sort of off the boil for that type of equipment at the moment.
Yeah.
I sort of blow hot and cold. I should have really bought one of the Dark Series Matriarchs last year.
Yeah.
Instead of buying the Polybrute. That would have been that would have been a better purchase. Mm-hmm. But alas, I didn't. And the only thing that I'm considering, as I mentioned earlier, was a Super 6, a UDO Super 6.
They are nice. Would you go for the module or the full beans?
No, I want the full beans.
The full beans. That's the only way. But yep, they're going. Sadness, because they look cool.
I always consider them to be a limited edition anyway.
It was weird. I think when they announced them, they just didn't bother committing to when they would disappear.
And they haven't been, well, as far as I can tell, they haven't sort of been a massive seller. A lot of people still, because I'm torn. I still quite like the colourful one.
I like both, definitely. There's a sleekness to the Dark series, but pretty colours are cool. I think maybe it's just the Matriarch is just that bit weirder, because it sits in a price bracket that includes full-on big polysynths, and it's actually only four voices, and it's paraphonic and kind of stereo and weird and semi-modular, and that's what makes it amazing. But it has less of a mass appeal than something like the Grandmother would.
Certainly, of course. It'd be a great controller for modular system, or decent sized modular system.
Yes. It would be great sitting in front of a moth or a mothlet. I need to find out a name for a young moth. Mine
It'd be a grub of some description. It'd be
grub.
The grubs that eat your woolies.
Yeah. Lava.
Yeah, lava. A larvae.
It doesn't quite have the same ring.
Well, that's what it's going to be, though, isn't it?
Yeah, little small moth. There we are. Newsed. Have we got any more chats to have?
I didn't see anything. It's thin gruel again, unfortunately.
Delicious. So, does that mean it's time for the...
Yes.
That's how it acronyms, or initialisms, or whatever the word is for it. The miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. Yes. Pete, are you ready to go?
I could go now.
Oh, yeah.
If that helps. Right, this week I have been watching the...
that one.
This week I have been watching the Imperial War Museum YouTube channel.
I like the Imperial War Museum. It's a good day out.
I haven't been in, I want to say, I haven't been in at least 40-something years.
Oh, yeah.
I really haven't been there in a long while.
For whatever reason, my memory of the Imperial War Museum is completely tied to my memory of having my first ever soft pretzel. But that's an aside.
Just one of those weird associations.
Exactly.
I'm not even sure what part of London it's in, because I haven't been so long.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. I was quite young when I went there. Anyway, their YouTube channel.
Yes. So they do have other locations apart from the, what could you describe as the main museum in London. They have sort of more aircraft orientated places where they can hold exhibits, and I've been watching a lot of videos which feature planes in their collection. So various people who work at the museum host the various videos and detail a 10-minute sort of history of a particular aircraft.
Yeah.
And they are quite informing. They don't, as I say, as I mentioned last week, my attention span has shriveled up to a very short period of time now. So these suit me quite well because there's nothing that extensive. It's just that sort of initial download of information. And I'm looking through it now. There's nothing really that lasts more than 15 minutes. That is some of the more longer ones. A lot of them are around the 10-minute mark or even less sometimes. Yeah. And they range from all sorts of things. But the ones that I've been mainly watching have been the ones to do with aircraft of all ilks, ranging from First World War to Second World War to other aircraft that are substantially more modern. And I'm quite surprised what they have been donated by various organisations. They even have quite a few American aircraft as well.
Oh yeah, nice.
Some of which were actually stationed in the UK at times, and others that have just been donated by the US government / military to the War Museum. Anyway, that is my recommendation for this week. It is the Imperial War Museum's YouTube channel.
Awesome. I've been meaning to get a date in the diary to go to the Brooklands Museum with Thomas from Gatvol, who was on the podcast a while ago.
Okay.
He's a bit of a planes nerd, and I do enjoy an aeronautical museum experience.
Yes, I suppose it's where one of the aircraft factories used to be.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I went on a bike ride the other day and cycled up some of the old banked circuit around there, which is quite fun.
I don't know if it's the first, but it's got to be one of the oldest racetracks in the world.
Yeah, I remember watching something on the history of it, but it's all escaped my brain. But there's still bits of it there, and you can cycle on them if you want.
Quite a lot of it there. Unfortunately, they've cut through because there's a large retail park on the inside of the racetrack now.
Yeah.
And they've had to cut through sort of sections of the embankment of the actual racetrack to get there. Other than that, there's I think there's going to be, good 70% of the racetrack is still there.
So I think the section that I was on was no more than 200 metres long. It wasn't a big bit.
No, there is a society that sort of caters and cares for
what's left.
Do you remember the James May
program? One of my favourite TV shows of all time.
So was that, I can't remember what he was going round. Was it Scalextrics or something?
Yeah, that was the Scalextrics Scale X trick. I can never remember where the X is. Anyway, Scalextric track. I'm pretty sure that was that episode. Yes, no, it totally was. That was a good one. It was either, must have been James May's Toy Stories, because he also did Top Toys, which is a similar vein.
I can't remember which series it was, but it was interesting because they had to traverse a few
all of the broken sections.
There's a small housing estate on one of the sections.
Yeah.
And other roads and bits and pieces, but that sort of demonstrated there was still a lot there.
Yeah, so there's a bonus for you this week. James May's Top Toys or Toy Stories. They're great. Now, mine is a Netflix thing. It's not really a Netflix thing. It was a BBC thing, but now it's available on Netflix. It reminds me of Doctor Who in some ways, because the effects are pretty poor in an endearing kind of way. It's Merlin. Did you watch Merlin when it was on TV at all?
Occasionally. The kids used to watch it when it was on, and it was good, I want to say about 15 years ago, was it?
No, originally. I think I was older when this particular series was on.
You're talking about the BBC series of Merlin? Okay.
There might be multiple ones. I don't know which one we're talking about.
Okay, let's do some research.
Yeah, the one I'm talking about is 2008.
Okay, well that's still 14 years ago.
I forget, it's 2022 now, so it's ages ago.
Yeah.
Wow. But yes, 2008's Merlin TV series. It's one of those things, you know, every episode there's some new confounded danger that Arthur and Merlin find themselves in, but it's just nice. It's not the height of art or anything, but it's good fun. And yeah, endearingly kind of bad special effects, but there's decent enough acting, and it's just nice. I like it.
Just find it cozy and comforting.
Exactly. It's great. You always know they'll make it through the episode. About 40 minutes, so nice and digestible chunks.
So where can one see the episodes of Merlin these days?
Other than Netflix, maybe iPlayer? Yeah, iPlayer looks like. Those two, Netflix and iPlayer.
But for most other people, or certainly people outside the UK that can't get the BBC iPlayer, it would be Netflix.
Yes, assuming it's on American Netflix or whichever country you might be in. I don't know what kind of BBC selection they might get.
Or they can use a VPN.
Although, it's not like it's illegal. Yeah, questionable. Anyway, thank you for tuning in, as always, to Rack Addicts After Hours. It'll be 1:09 next week, and we hope you're listening then. Stay safe. Farewell.